Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now. Now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Carrie Leiterson, a writer over at In These Times, about how we could create some jobs. I mean, back in November, the Republicans ran on the jobs, jobs, jobs platform, and then the day after the election, it kind of changed. Not a bill, not a policy, not a discussion of how to create any jobs. Carrie's got an interesting idea, and we'll talk with her later in the program. Also on the program tonight, Peter Crawford from Economy in Crisis talking about the Korean Free Trade Agreement. Again, another one of these job-killing, if you will, trade agreements that are going to hurt us, going to do very well for the banking industry, going to do very, very well for the investor class. The global citizens will do very well. You and I, not so well. The Korean workers, not so well. For the workers, it's more of pitting each other against one another for, so you can have this race to the bottom. So it'll be interesting to see where Peter Crawford's position on the South Korean Free Trade Agreement is. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Today is Election Day, and as you can, those of you watching on Ustream and at our website at thericksmithshow.com can see, I have my I Voted Today little sticker on my shirt. I hope you have yours as well. Early numbers, somewhere I've heard 18 to 20 to 25%. It'll be interesting to see where this turns out tomorrow as the votes are being counted as we speak. Hopefully we will have some definitive numbers by the end of the program tonight. At midnight to pass along to show who won, who lost, and who ran the good campaigns. Also, we will take your calls on that. Did you vote? For me, interestingly enough, I look up in New Hampshire. And again, you know, all of this disenfranchisement that goes on with the Republicans trying to suppress the vote, trying to do whatever they can do to keep people away from the voting polls. I find it interesting that in New Hampshire, where, like here in Pennsylvania, they have a law going through the process to basically hold down the votes by having one of these. You have to have your papers. You have to have your photo ID. You have to have one of their prescribed methods of identification. Basically your driver's license or a photo ID of the state, but they haven't passed it yet. But at polling stations, there was a big sign on the window that said, notice, per pending legislation, you will be required to produce a photo ID in order to receive a ballot. Per pending legislation. Now, they're saying that a bunch of people went away. They saw the sign. They said, I don't have it. I'm going to go home. So a bunch of people in New Hampshire today did not have the opportunity to vote. And I would say You want someone, you want to pass a bill? You want to go after a bill? This is the kind of fraud. This is the kind of abuse. This is the kind of voter suppression that should be against the law. The person who taped this to the window, they should have a nice pair of silver bracelets. And we should give them a nice gray room with, you know, with a nice view of bars. And what I find amazing is all across the country, 22 states across the country are pursuing these voter identification laws to do just what this did, turn people away at the door, to hold down the vote. Yet, no one can give me a significant number. In fact, there were no cases, as far as I understand, that were convicted, that were brought to court, any of that, of people voting twice, of people who were voting as someone else. So there's no problem as far as I'm seeing. Now, personally, I don't think I don't have a problem right now at this point in my life. And this is how you have to think about this. At this point in my life right now, I really don't have a problem showing my ID. I don't. Because I've got a driver's license. I drive to work every day. I'm in the middle of my life. I've got all that stuff. It's not difficult for me. I've already got it. I think about my grandmother, who has not driven a car in probably 6 or 7 years. Her driver's license is expired. Sorry, expired driver's license. It's not identification. It's expired. So I think about when I get older, and I do see us down the road tightening how seniors are driving and tightening the rules there as more people enter the roadways. I do see that. I see us getting more stringent in the requirements. So that means, how are you going to get around? That means that voting poll that I've been going to every year for years and years and years, and I know the person sitting behind the desk, I can't vote because I don't have a little card that has my identification on it, doesn't have my picture on it. That's what they're pushing through our state legislature. House Bill 934. And like I said, well, I don't have a problem right now reaching into my pocket and producing a driver's license. It's because I've got one. I know down the road it's going to be a hardship, and I know that there are seniors that it's going to be a hardship. I know that there are people who are living in poverty like I was as a child, not on the bus line, where it would be a hardship to go and get that ID. But that's the point. And that's the point of all of this stuff. It's to hold that vote down. It's to make sure that they can, you know, I go back to the Paul Weyrich. Paul Weyrich, the guy who co-founder of the Heritage Foundation, very piously said, pompously said, you know, who wants everyone to vote? I don't want everyone to vote. He says, you know, our power goes up as the voting populace goes down. Because they understand, the right understands, the wealth class understands that their numbers are very small. So what they need to do is they need to turn out all of their people, and they need to suppress as many votes as possible. And they do that very well. I mean, you look at all the schemes that have happened in the last 10, 15, 20 years, it's mind, especially the last 10. Since 2000, and the caging and all of the stuff that went on there, throwing people off the voting rolls because they were, maybe their name sounded kind of like a felon's name, so they were purged from the roll, and there was the one guy who they said was going to commit a felony in 7 years, so they threw him off the voting rolls because they were clairvoyant, and they could see into the future and knew this one guy, he was going to commit a crime, and we were going to convict him, so we are just going to take his rights away from him right now. He was not able to vote in 2000. Now, they want to take your right to vote away by saying, you have to have an ID. You have to have a photo card. I want your picture. But corporations, for some odd reason, the right wing doesn't want us to know who's funding their elections. I mean, stop and think about the hypocrisy in this. Stop and think about this for a second. You, the lowly voter, the guy who's going to pull the lever, going to have your voice heard, going to stand up and take your country back. We want to know who you are. We want to know where you live. We want to know about you. But the person funding all of the right-wing attacks, all the TV ads, all the radio ads, putting the millions of dollars into campaigns, oh, we don't need to know who they are. We don't need to know. We don't need to know that. We don't need to disclose what Koch Brother Front Group is funding this attack or that. No, we don't need to know that. We just need to know about you. We need to know who you are. And again, it's about intimidation. It's about pulling you in front of the man and saying, who are you? Do you see the hypocrisy in this? Is this not the height of hypocrisy? And what you've got in Congress right now, you've got a whole bunch of Republicans. They're saying about 43, last time I looked, of these conservative Republicans from their Republican study group, who I'm told are the crazy of the crazy. They sent off a letter on Monday to the president saying that, you know what, if you introduce that executive order to make us to make those big corporations show where they're spending their money, we're going to go pass legislation. And I would say, good, go ahead. It's not going to go anywhere. Because I want to know where that money's coming from. I want to know who those attack ads are coming from. I want to know. I want to know who's spending millions of dollars attacking our political system. But yet our friends on the right, they will do whatever they can do to protect those who are destroying our system. Yet you and me, we need to show our papers. Every day we need to have our papers. It's amazing to me. You know, you brown people, especially the brown people, because you know anybody who's brown is going to be harassed constantly. If you're Asian if you're Hispanic or any of that, you're going to get harassed constantly. They're going to harass you at the polls for your papers. They're going to want to know, are you a citizen? Are you illegal? All for the right to vote. But the billionaire class, sorry. You can go ahead. Because you're above the law. The big corporate citizens are above the law. The Walmarts of the world. Mr. Walmart, I'm sorry. Because they're people now. In fact, they're people with more rights than you or I have. So now you look in Minnesota. The state of Minnesota, and good for them. The 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on Monday said that Minnesota can require corporations to disclose what they spend on political candidates. And I think it's a good thing. The group argued that it hampers their free speech. Oh, money is free speech. But the court, by a 2-1 vote, sided with a federal judge to not block the state campaign finance law requiring corporate disclosure, which, again, you know, this is where I guess fighting back against Citizens United is going to start. And where I agree with the Tenthers, on the state level, you should be able to pass laws like this. And this is how we'll move into a federal law. This is going to have to be what happens. This is how we're going to have to take our democracy back, because this next election cycle, the 2012 election cycle, is by far, I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure this out, by far going to be the most expensive in the history of this country. You look at the money that they're raising as we speak, and part of me thinks the reason you've got so many people entering the race is they don't think they're going to win. It's just they want to fill their pockets. Lastly, before we take a break, I don't know if you've been following this out in Wisconsin. They are recounting all of the votes in the state Supreme Court race out there between Kloppenburg and Prosser. Right now, as it stands, Kloppenburg has about a 16,500 vote lead, with about three about 3% of the vote to, yet to be counted. And guess where that most of that last 3% is? That's right, Waukesha County, the place where, wow, mysteriously, they found 14,000 votes on a computer that somebody just took home with them. It happens all the time. It's routine. In fact, tonight, when the people go home from the voting machines, some of them are going to have the votes in their pockets. Some of them will. They'll have the little cards. They'll have the little readers in their pocket. And tomorrow morning, they'll wake up and, oh, dummy me. We need to count these. Well, wait a minute. That doesn't happen. I guess it's only in Waukesha County where someone can go home with a computer with 14,000 votes on it. But anyway, she leads about 16,500 votes with 3% left to go. So we will see in the coming days what the final total is. I still think she's going to lose by a handful of votes. But there's 100 precincts yet to go. So it will be interesting. Anyway, going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Did you vote today? That's what I want to know. We're right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Those are chants from the streets of Madison, Wisconsin on May 14, 2011. That chant was brought to Madison by professional firefighters of Wisconsin President Maylin Mitchell, who heard it during a stop in Portland, Oregon. After Mitchell saw the passion and fire that was inspired by Madison on the streets of Portland, he promised that he would bring the chant back. Portland, like many other cities and states around the country, have seen people taking to the streets, inspired by the demonstrations that they saw in Madison, where tens of thousands, day in and day out, protested proposals of Governor Scott Walker that they believed were attacks on not only unions, but also the middle class. Wisconsin State Senator John Erpenbach, who was one of the 14 Democratic senators that left the state after a collective bargaining stripping bill was presented by Walker, said Wisconsinites need to show the rest of the world what they can do.
It started here in Madison, Wisconsin, and it's going to end here in Wisconsin. We are going to show the nation what we are all about.
The fight in Wisconsin has expanded to include other parts of Walker's bill. During Saturday's rally, multiple people representing various interests spoke. One was dairy farmer Sarah Lloyd, who said the budget is bad for Wisconsin family farmers.
I work off of the farm to bring health insurance back to the farm, and my sister-in-law works in a school as a teacher to bring health insurance back to the farm. So when we cut benefits to public employees and we cut badger care, we hurt family farms.
According to Wisconsin Alliance of Retired Americans President Leon Brzezinski, the budget also directly impacts tens of thousands of Wisconsin seniors. One major cut is to the homestead tax credits.
They're going to cut the homestead tax credit, which will increase taxes for seniors who have low incomes. It works with over 90,000 Wisconsin seniors and disabled residents on the highly successful senior care drug program. To sign up for Medicare Part D. That will significantly add out-of-pocket expenses for many of these folks at several thousand dollars a year more.
The uniting message between all the speakers on Saturday was that it's time for Wisconsinites to move the fight from the capital city of Madison to all of the surrounding communities. Opponents of Walker are currently working on 6 recall campaigns that, if at the least 3 are successful, could see the power of the Senate shift from GOP to Democrat.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin' but the weight is. Everything's raisin' but the weight is. Gasoline, groceries, and our hate is.
brazen, but the weight is.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. I guess everyone has heard the former governor of California got himself in a little bind, if you will. And that's the topic of our Borowitz report for the day. Amid rumors that he fathered a child with a member of his household staff 10 years ago, former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger made an emotional confession at a hastily called press conference today. Mr. Schwarzenegger told the room full of stunned reporters, "I am the sperminator." The former governor and film star said that he knew the child in question was his after no one could understand a damn thing he was saying. He said that when he first learned that he had fathered the child, he considered a variety of options to remedy the situation, including traveling back in time 10 years ago and using a condom. According to Mr. Schwarzenegger, today's shocking revelations could end his political career. But he added, "On the plus side, I am now qualified to run for the IMF." So there you go. Very interesting. Interesting indeed. And again, you know, another one of these big sex scandals that, you know, has everyone in a tizzy and all worked up. And you look across the political spectrum, and at some point, I would like to just be able to say, you know what? When people, what these folks do in the confines of their four walls with consenting adults, their business. I don't care who's doing who or what. Just do your job. It's amazing to me that we have based our voting habits on looking at people's personal character lives, saying, well, you know, he cheated on his wife, so he can't be a good politician. I don't care if you're doing that. What I care about are people who believe in what they're doing in public service and actually being committed to it. All we have now, it seems like, are a bunch of politicians who, and you know, maybe there are some out there that this doesn't apply to, but who don't believe in government and are going to do everything that they can do to restrain what government is capable of doing. And, I go look at some of the big sex scandals, you know, of recently. I look at Chris Lee, the Republican from New York. Just months after taking office as, you know, one of the kind of T-Twizzler guys, he's trying to pick up a woman on Craigslist, you know, saying that, you know, he was a divorce lobbyist and all this stuff, taking pictures of himself in a hotel mirror. Come on, you got to know you're going to get caught. But again, you know, here next Tuesday, they're going to run to fill his seat. And that has been a very interesting race out there in the 26th district of New York, the congressional district there. Very interesting because it's all over the place. You got the guy who made the prank phone call to Scott Walker running. You've got the T-Twizzler guy who basically is nuts. And then you've got the Republican and the Democrat and a whole host of characters. So next Tuesday will be interesting as well, as we see what goes on there. And you think about some of the other scandals that have gone on, the Bill Clinton thing, which I find interesting in that I thought he was a great orator. I thought he was someone who believed in the job. I didn't always agree with what he did. I'm not a huge fan. But I thought as a president, he did the job like no one else, because I truly believe he loved public service. But here again, the people who were going after him, and it's amazing, you go back and you look at that time period, and all the people who stood up with their righteous indignation, pointing their finger at him, are the people we now find out years later were doing the exact same thing. I mean, look at Newt Gingrich. The whole time he's pointing his, you know, his little sausage finger at Clinton, he himself doing the exact same thing. And under the guise of, I love my country and I work too hard. Which here again, I don't know very many guys who can go home to their wives and say, you know what, honey? I love my country. I work too hard and I sometimes make mistakes. So forgive me. I'm generally not going to work that way. Some of my other favorite sex scandals, Mark Foley, kind of makes him a Republican congressman. You remember him from Florida a couple of years ago. Basically left in shame, kind of, you know, making that joke that we used to tell when we were kids about congressmen and pages, true.
You know, because he said, you know, the joke went, why don't congressmen use bookmarks? Because they like their pages bent over. So basically, you know, and Mark Foley being that guy, kind of interesting. You know, my other favorite, Diaper Dave Vitter, you know, he had his name on the D.C. Madams list, and then the rumors started flying that he likes to wear diapers and be cleaned up, and another good, solid, God-fearing Christian Republican. You got to love that. And, you know, I do. And here recently, John Ensign, a guy who decided, hey, let's buy off our mistress and her husband. Let's just try and buy him off. Nah, don't worry about it. Another one of my favorites recently, the former governor of South Carolina off traipsing on the Appalachian Trail. And if the only way that that was true is if they moved the Appalachian Trail to Argentina and the mountains were attached to a female reporter, then that was a true statement, not happening. And then one of my favorites of all times, Lusty Larry Craig.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
The only person that's not on the list, and you know, most of these people came off of a list over at the National Journal. The one guy that isn't on the list, and he's always my favorite sex scandal person to talk about because it really shows the height of the hypocrisy. And I'm hoping, I really am, and the reason I bring this up is I'm hoping at some point we can just say, you know what? I don't care what you're doing in your bedroom. Don't care. That's between you and your wife or you and your husband or whatever. That's your business. Don't care. Let's stop judging people on that. Let's judge them on what they do, the job that they do. But my favorite one of all time has got to be Bob Allen. Bob Allen will always be my number one favorite sex scandal of all time. The former Republican state legislator who every year when he was in office, he thought it would be a good idea to introduce a bill that says that, you know, two guys having sex in a bathroom is now a felony. And it would be, if the next thing didn't happen, it would just end there. But there's Bob Allen walking through the park one day in the merry month of May. And it starts to rain. So without an umbrella, he's cold and shivering. And he races to the nearest structure, which just happens to be a bathroom. And in that structure that just happens to be a bathroom is a very large black man. So Mr. Allen, of course, being... well, not a shrieking violet in himself, a large man himself, said he felt fear. He was fearful of the thunder and the lightning and the large black man. So naturally, his first instinct is to pay this very large black man to have sex. And he really thought someone was going to buy that. I mean, that's the part that I love. You couldn't think of a better lie than that. I don't know. And maybe that's our problem. You know, if that's what gets him through the day and that's what makes him a decent human being, has nothing to do with me. At the end of the day, all of this stuff, all of these so-called sex scandals, I don't care about. You know what I care about? I care about having good schools. I care about having safe neighborhoods. I care about having roads that I can drive on that my car isn't going to be all screwed up from the potholes. I care about having a community where it's safe and it invites investment and it's business, not just business friendly, but worker friendly and business, compatible. I want a climate where we can have economic growth. We can have good solid wages. We can have health care and pensions and all of the things that make a middle class existence on this planet. I don't care. I really don't care where Arnold, puts his little Arnold. Not all that concerned. That's a thing between him and his wife. Personally, the people I feel sorry for in this are the 10-year-old kid who now I'm sure everyone is going to eventually know, and the husband of the woman who the Arnold, the Sperminator, had his little tryst with, who's been raising that kid for the last 10 years. That's who I feel sorry for, because our media is merciless. Because people have some bizarre thirst to see, oh, who is it? Oh, we got to know. instead of saying, hey, how do we make sure that Granny gets the health care that she needs? How do we make sure that those kids in Center City, Philadelphia, they get the education they need? The kids right here in Central Pennsylvania, how do they get the education they need? How do we make sure that kids going into college get into college and can go through and not be saddled with a lifetime of debt? How can we do those things? But our media, and including me for the last 15 minutes, 12 minutes, we're talking about where little Arnold was. Amazing stuff. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this with your thoughts.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith. The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Come on, Obama. Do it. Stand up, stand tall, stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizen United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections. Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. Believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. The AP is reporting that Thursday will be the deadline to stop bringing polluted wastewater to river treatment plants. So no more of the Marcellus Shale drillers will they be allowed to take their toxic sludge, their toxic liquid to the rivers. But hey, feel free until Thursday to dump your polluted toxic liquid into the rivers until the magic deadline. You know, this is what gets me. Thursday's the deadline, so make sure you get it in before then. If it's bad, why didn't you stop it? I mean, really, stop and think about this for a second. You know, they're saying, hey, you know, maybe there's some concerns. We want to make sure that, you know, we make sure that the water is drinkable. We don't want any more contamination. You know, we just want to make sure that everything's okay. But we're going to keep doing it until this arbitrary date into the future. when we've decided that somehow, maybe possibly, we won't cause as much damage. I mean, this is my problem with how we're doing this whole regulation of the drilling industry in this hodgepodge fashion, in this very band-aid kind of reactionary fashion. But understand who we have leading us. We have Governor Corporate, who took a boatload of cash from the drilling industry. And in the grand scheme of things, $1 million is not an awful lot of money. But for a politician, that is. I mean, that's a boatload. But in the grand scheme, when you're talking about an industry that's going to go well into the trillions, $1 million, that's kind of something that'd fall on your pocket on the way to the bank. So anyway, the Patriot News is touting this huge fine that the EPA slapped on Chesapeake Energy. They're saying, oh, they fined them $1 million today. $1 million for contaminating the water wells in Bradford County and for the big tank fire they had in Washington County. So they got the DEP secretary, this Michael Krantzner, out there. And I could just see it. I wish I were there. You know, maybe they had a big cardboard, instead of a cardboard check, maybe they had a big cardboard citation. I mean, could you see that? Because that's kind of how I'm seeing this whole thing playing out. That, oh, Corbett's going to be tough on the energy drillers, going to be tough on the drillers. You know, he's really cracking down. And then you read into the article that $200,000 of the fine are going to go to plugging the abandoned well. And I'm going, hold on, wait a second. Well, what part of it's a fine? What else don't we know? Where is the money going? I guess they're going to have to clean up this Chesapeake Energy is going to have to clean up the 16 families, wells that they contaminated. And I wonder what that means. Does it mean they're just going to have to buy them bottled water and, hey, you know, your spigot's going to catch on fire for the rest of your existence? I don't know. The article doesn't say. But again, you know, you go back to this and where's the oversight? Where's the penalty phase in all of this? And look at what we talked about yesterday with BP, basically writing off all of their spill cleanup as just a normal business expense. You know, it's just part of doing business. Every once in a while, we're going to spew, hundreds of millions of gallons of you know, oil into the water. Don't worry about it. And I guess, you know, in the drilling industry here, hey, don't worry about it. We're going to contaminate some wells every once in a while. You just get over it. Just be happy we're here. We could go somewhere else. I mean, if you listen to the radical right, that's what they keep saying. Well, if we tax them, and if we regulate them, and if we hold them accountable, they'll go somewhere else. No, they're not going anywhere else. The gas is here. And as soon as New York lifts their moratorium, they're going to go there too, because that's where gas is at. I mean, it's just mind-boggling, this ridiculous notion that we just keep letting them drill and keep letting them drill and being so far behind, and every day we're falling further and further behind. I mean, before they stuck needle one in the ground, you should have had a groundwork in place. You should have had the rules in place and how you wanted to see this industry grow, where what the target was, and do it in a way that's not going to have boom bust cycles. So that we maybe learn some lessons from the coal industry. Maybe, you know, is that possible? So anyway, they came out and they made a big deal of this, and hey, you know, we're gonna really get them. We're gonna really stick it to them. We're gonna $1 million fine. Except we find out that 200,000 of it's gonna be to plug one of their wells. I'm curious, to be honest, if fines will now be a regular course of business expenditure on their taxes. How much of that $1 million supposed fine will you and I have to cover? Because you look at the BP spill, and I said it before, we're going to get screwed on that. Because we usually do. The working people usually do. We're the ones who have to suffer the adverse effects of the air and the water being contaminated. We're the ones who are going to have to reach into our pocket to clean up the mess. We already know that. And that's why I keep saying we need to have a high enough drilling tax, like Texas, like West Virginia, like Oklahoma, like Alaska, that puts some money into our coffers to help with education, to help with roads and bridges, to help with paying down our deficit, whatever, but having some cash available that when we do have to pay it back, we do have to remediate, and we do have to clean up all the mess, that we have the resources to do so. Instead of choosing the path that the Republicans want to take us down. And look, they want to take us down a privatization path. They want to fire sale off all of the state assets. They want to get rid of anything that is ours, that is the matter of the commons, the publics. Your roads, get rid of that turnpike. Get rid of the parking garages. Get rid of whatever you can get rid of. Sell it off. And you look at this guy named Daniel Ross, or Dennis Ross. He's a Republican from Florida and a proud member of the Tea Party caucus. That's right, the Tea Party caucus. Because we don't say caucus. We say caucus. He told Reuters. He said, I don't think the Treasury has been up front with us. He said, I'm not concerned. I'm not convinced that the sky is falling on August 3rd. He also went on to say, I'm not an economist. Finally, something you can believe. But I have maintained a household. Oh, boy, good for you. Gold star. Let's get you a cookie. He goes on to say the federal government owns 70% of Utah. For example, he said there are federal buildings. If you need cash, let's start liquidating. Other great conservative ideas? And tell me what you think on this. Think this is a good idea? We open up Fort Knox, and gold is at $1,500 an ounce. We just open up gold, Fort Knox. And we put it on those talk on the right wing talk shows, and we sell all the gold in Fort Knox. Is that a good idea, you think? That's what the conservatives want to do. So everything that is ours, everything that is part of our nation, they want to liquidate. And right now, what amazes me is they want to do it now, when their buddies can get everything at fire sale prices. And I've been saying this for months. This is the Republican game plan. This is the right-wing agenda. This is what they've been working for 40 years to get to. The big prizes. And for dirt cheap. They created this crisis. They allowed Wall Street to collapse. And they're creating this debt crisis. They've created this. And they're going to milk this for everything that it's worth. They're going to milk every penny they can get out of these, out of us poor, dumb working stiffs. Because we're not smart enough to tell them no. Or at least they think. I mean, at some point, I got to hope and I've got to have faith in the American working class that we still have a bit of pride and a bit of American spirit left from the terrorism that we've been under for the last 30 years, that we're going to stand up together and say no more. And this hostage situation that they keep us under, we're going to fight back against. I mean, stop and think about it for a minute. They want to liquidate all of the country's assets. And they want to hold back any additional revenue. Understand, and look, I'm not an economist, but much like our friend, the Tea Party caucus guy, who's maintained a household, selling off your house at the bottom of the recession, I don't think anybody, I don't care how extreme right, how extreme left, I don't care where you are, I don't know anybody who would think it is a good idea to sell off all your possessions at a time of economic downturn. I just don't think that average common sense people think that's a good idea. But that's what the extreme right is peddling. That's what the right wing is peddling to us. This idea that, you know what? We can just sell it all off. And like this guy said, just sell off Utah. I'm going, wouldn't be a bad state to sell off. Maybe the Saudis would buy it. Maybe the Chinese would buy it. They can have all the Mormons. What about Texas? Put Texas up for sale on the chopping block? And if you're going to sell it, why don't we sell it back to the people? You and me, the taxpayers, the people who own this country. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Rick Smith. Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
My name's Diane. I'm a single mom. I have twin boys who are 19, Alex and Tyler. We are a very close family, and I miss them a lot when they're away at school.
I definitely miss her. I mean, she did our laundry back when we were home. Now we got to do it ourselves, so if nothing else, that's why we miss her.
Diane wanted individual health insurance for her sons, but she needed something affordable.
Health insurance is important because all it would take was one accident, and I could lose everything I worked for.
So she did her research and called Georgiana at Capital Blue Cross.
Georgiana was great right from the beginning. She stepped me through the entire process, and the coverage is wonderful. They have a great plan, and it's affordable. I feel like I can sleep at night knowing that my boys are covered.
My mom will always be the smartest one.
Text radio to 74574 for a sample quote. Message and data rates may apply. Your final quote may vary. Please don't text and drive. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
One 888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. So the hostage situation is undergoing. Where the siege is on the right wing. Again, I'm telling you, I think they're going to hold this country hostage for as long as they can to get as much as they can to fill the coffers of those who are pulling their strings or putting money into their campaign coffers. But you know what's interesting? Senator Tom Coburn, Republican from Oklahoma, he pulled out of the quote-unquote Gang of Six talks, leaving two Republicans and three Democrats hanging in the wind. Coburn said, we can't bridge the gulf of where we need to go on mandatory spending. He said, I don't see that there's going to be any fruition in continuing them at this time. He said, we're at an impasse. There's no reason to sit and talk about the same thing over and over again and not getting any movement. He goes on, the head of the Democratic group says, they don't want to go where I want to go, and I don't want to go where they want to go. So basically, we're in this situation where they've dug in, and good for the Democrats on one hand, because, you know, for too long, they've been the ones who constantly give in. And I think part of what's going on is the Republicans were fully expecting that cave. I think they were fully expecting them to say, well, you know, okay, we care about the country too much. We don't want to see it collapse. So whatever you want, please just don't harm us. Please just don't destroy the country, please. And I think the Republicans are kind of sitting back going, wow, they're actually digging in on something. And what they're digging in on is, look, I don't think we should be talking about massive, massive cuts and complete structural changes to our system while we've got this weight hanging over our head. Look, talk about the budget, talk about all of that stuff in a different forum. This debt ceiling thing, this is huge. And I think Geithner is right. I think he's absolutely right. We got to deal with it. But if we don't do something with this debt situation, we're going to end up paying much higher interest rates. And down the road, it's going to cost us a ton down the road of lost opportunity costs. It's going to cost us a ton down the road in higher interest rates. And, you know, like he said, when confidence turns, it can be brutal. And with a momentum that is very difficult and costly to arrest. But what's going on is the right sees this as an opportunity. We're going to hold them hostage. We're going to make sure that we get our pound of flesh. And I think, you know, in all of this, I'm not a huge fan of Geithner, but I think in all of this, he's trying to be the adult in the room saying, look, have your political play. Do your pandering on the spending. Do your pandering on the budget, but not on this. This is too important. This comes back down to what we're going to have to pay down the road. If we default, we're in big trouble. Now, I hope it doesn't get to that, and I don't think it will. But the way they seem to be dug in right now, I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? Do we raise the debt limit? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think it's a good idea to stand your ground and say, you know what? I don't care if the country goes straight to Hades. We're standing our ground. No new spending. Or trillions of dollars in cuts. Because the Republicans seem to think that the American people have spoken. That the election was about cutting, and the election was about pain, and the election was about all of these things that I don't remember. In fact, what I remember Republicans saying this during the election.
There is not a meeting that I have as a freshman with members of leadership where jobs, job growth, economic growth isn't the first, second, and third priority.
Jobs continue to be our highest priority.
We need to focus on job creation and economic growth.
Our first priority today is job growth.
Job creation has to be the number one priority for both parties.
Our goal is to focus on job creation.
Yep, you know, job creation. That was it. He kept telling us that. But since they've taken power, none of that. And now they've got this opportunity to really squeeze us by the things attached to the short hairs. And what's that going to do for jobs? They kept telling us. Now, this is where I'm hoping that the voters will remember, because I do believe the message in November was strictly about jobs. It was about the unemployment rate. It was about getting the American people back to work. The third way, one of these middle-of-the-road think tanks who tries to compromise and be the center of the line, they're saying, and it's a modest number, a very conservative number, they're saying that if the debt limit doesn't get passed and we end up defaulting and we end up going down that road, you're going to see 640,000 jobs gone immediately. Gone. Vanished. What happened to the jobs agenda? It's going to be gone. And yet, you know, we keep hearing the Republicans talking about we need massive cuts to Social Security and massive cuts to Medicare and to Medicaid, you know, those entitlements. But we're not going to cut any funding or any subsidies to the oil industry. And, you know, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said today that he expects that there's going to be some cuts in the subsidies that we give. I shouldn't say subsidies, the welfare that we give to the oil industry as part of this agreement. I don't know about you, and maybe you've got a better idea than I do, but before we start talking about cutting Medicare programs, before we start talking about taking health insurance from children and the poor, and before we start talking about changing the whole structure of Social Security and really completely untying the social safety net, maybe, possibly, just a thought, the industry that made $35 billion in the first 3 months of this year could do without the welfare that we give to them. Maybe. Just a bizarre thought. Maybe I'm the crazy one. I don't know. But again, maybe the welfare that we're handing out to the big oil industry, maybe that's the place to start. It's not the end, but it's a place to start, in my opinion. And what I find remarkable is while we're playing with fire, while we're walking down this path and you've got people like Representative Ross saying, well, I don't believe the numbers. I don't believe Geithner. I don't think the sky is falling. You see the major newspapers who have really just taken to this debt thing and the deficit thing. They have, in fact, their coverage, according to the National Journal, has shown a massive shift away from the unemployed and focusing their attention on the deficit. So basically, the unemployed, they've gotten the shaft in all of this. They're the forgotten ones. And I think even when they used the word unemployed, when it was high on their radar, it was never in a light that was meant well for working people. It was always seen as a negative and a cost, and it was seen as this burden. Instead of saying, these are how we're keeping families together. This is how we're making sure our economy doesn't completely collapse. This is how we're making sure small businesses stay around. You didn't hear it in that vein. You always heard it in a negative light. But this deficit thing, they have just taken full force. And the number of times that it's been mentioned in, and I guess the National Journal, they followed five of the big name newspapers. The New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, Useless Today, and the Washington Post. They followed them over a two-year period, and they looked at how many times they reported the word unemployment or the word deficits, and they're finding that it's completely going in the opposite directions. While early in 2009, they were about even, and they followed kind of even up until now, where you look at it's all about the deficit, and those unemployed basically screw them. And that's kind of where we've ended up. And what concerns me about this is, while you're talking about this hostage situation, it would be very easy to say, well, we just cut off all that funding to help those poor people, all those funding to help those unemployed people. Like no more food stamps to help families stay together and help feed their children. No more unemployment to make sure that families stay together and pay their rent. No more of that. No more Medicaid to make sure that those poor folks who lost their job through no fault of their own maybe get some health care when they need it. We're up in the over 50 million range of uninsured in this country. We are going in absolutely the wrong direction, and the Republicans are very happy to take us down that road. Very happy. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to talk about the Korean Free Trade Agreement, which I'm not a huge fan of. I'm not a fan of it at all. I think it's a bad idea. But again, another Democrat who's bringing us a bad trade deal. So when we come back, we're going to talk with Peter Crawford from Economy in Crisis. And the thing that I have to ask, and I'm going to ask Peter Crawford, is do the Korean, South Korean workers want this agreement? Because I don't think they do either. They don't want to be put in a situation where they're racing to the bottom for wages and benefits, and they're the ones struggling as well. I mean, they've been slowly bringing themselves up. Do they really want to be in a position where now they're competing against a nation that, to be honest, has a pretty low wage structure? It'll be interesting to see what Peter Crawford has to say. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Ring that bell, now, PSO!
Those are chants from the streets of Madison, Wisconsin on May 14, 2011. That chant was brought to Madison by professional firefighters of Wisconsin President Malin Mitchell, who heard it during a stop in Portland, Oregon. After Mitchell saw the passion and fire that was inspired by Madison on the streets of Portland, he promised that he would bring the chant back. Portland, like many other cities and states around the country, have seen people taking to the streets, inspired by the demonstrations that they saw in Madison, where tens of thousands, day in and day out, protested proposals of Governor Scott Walker that they believed were attacks on not only unions, but also the middle class. Wisconsin State Senator John Erpenbach, who was one of the 14 Democratic senators that left the state after a collective bargaining stripping bill was presented by Walker, said Wisconsinites need to show the rest of the world what they can do.
It started here in Madison, Wisconsin, and it's going to end here in Wisconsin. We are going to show the nation what we are all about.
The fight in Wisconsin has expanded to include other parts of Walker's bill. During Saturday's rally, multiple people representing various interests spoke. One was dairy farmer Sarah Lloyd, who said the budget is bad for Wisconsin family farmers.
I work off of the farm to bring health insurance back to the farm, and my sister-in-law works in a school as a teacher to bring health insurance back to the farm. So when we cut benefits to public employees and we cut badger care, we hurt family farms.
According to Wisconsin Alliance of Retired Americans President Leon Brzezinski, the budget also directly impacts tens of thousands of Wisconsin seniors. One major cut is to the homestead tax credit.
The governor cut the homestead tax credit, which will increase taxes for seniors who have low incomes. It forces over 90,000 Wisconsin seniors and disabled residents on the highly successful senior care drug program to sign up for Medicare Part D. That will significantly add out-of-pocket expenses for many of these folks at several thousand dollars a year more.
The uniting message between all the speakers on Saturday was that it's time for Wisconsinites to move the fight from the capital city of Madison to all of the surrounding communities. Opponents of Walker are currently working on 6 recall campaigns that, if at the least 3 are successful, could see the power of the Senate shift from GOP to Democrat.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
To the Wall Street Shuffle, hear the money rustle, watch the greenbacks tumble, feel the talent crumble.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So this deal with South Korea, the president is saying, and we talked about this last night, nothing can go forward until they figure out what to do with the people who are affected, which affected means lose their jobs. So nothing can go forward until they figure out what to do with the affected workers, those who lost their jobs. But I was under the impression, and this is how it was kind of sold to me, that this was going to create jobs. So kind of interesting of the difference of rhetoric. That's why we've asked Peter Crawford from economyandcrisis.org to come talk to us about this South Korean free trade agreement. Peter, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, how you doing, Rick?
I am good. Looking at this agreement, first, I guess the big question is do the South Korean workers want this? Because I know the majority of workers in this country don't want it.
You know, that it's one of those things where I don't think either country is really in favor of this on the level of the general public. South Korean workers are looking at a situation where they're going to have a lot of jobs put in their country, created in their country, a lot of low pay, long hours. They don't have as many restrictions on labor laws and things like that. It's not the type of lifestyle that they're trying to create for their general populace.
So it's being sold to us as this idea that we're going to somehow create jobs. In fact, the auto workers jumped on board because they think it's going to create jobs for them. I'm sorry, I'm just not seeing it. They told us NAFTA was going to create jobs. They went down the line. All of these trade agreements were supposed to create opportunities for export. All I keep seeing are negative numbers and massive trade deficits with everybody.
Exactly. And I'm not really sure we've got Obama telling us at this point that we're probably going to see around 70,000 in-source jobs over here. According to the Economic Policy Institute, just in the first 7 years of the agreement alone, Cornish could cost as many as 160,000 American jobs. So the numbers really aren't adding up. That's not even half of what we would be losing if we're making these in-source jobs up. And these types of jobs are not really the types of jobs that Americans are going to be looking for. These are low-paying, low-end factory-type positions that are not going to take care of families and take care of people in America.
So basically what you're telling me is right now we've turned into basically the third world country, the exploitable labor country.
I wouldn't say we're quite there yet, but we're definitely on our way.
You know, and looking at this, then, you know, if it's as bad as I believe it is and as bad as you're saying it is, somebody has to benefit in this. Who are the beneficiaries?
Well, most likely we're looking at this is in the best interest of multinational corporations, special interest groups, you know, foreign powers who are going to benefit from this, larger economies. It's essentially not the middle class, not the lower class. It's not the general American person.
So basically another one of these agreements where the investor class, the quote-unquote global citizen, they're the ones who are going to do very well because, you know, in my reading of it, it opens up the South Korean financial industry to our big monopolies who will go in there, and they'll probably do very well for themselves. I don't know about us.
No, I would say not. And it does. It opens up their market to and it's not actually a large market. You look at the size of South Korea. They only have 48 million people over there. Over here, we've got over 300 million. So even when you're looking at a large corporation scale, they are going to increase their market. But if you look at how much the South Korean companies are going to increase their market, looking back this direction, it's just not even close.
In your piece, on 12 points that you've got, 12 problems I guess you have with this, one of the things you write is that the American textile industry will be further harmed. I got to be honest, I didn't realize we had any textile industry left, really.
There actually is. North and South Carolina still have a textile industry, but it is fledgling at this point. And it's because you see a lot of textiles coming in from India, from China, from Mexico. And certainly we will be seeing even more from South Korea.
In looking at these agreements, Peter Crawford, you know, one of the things that I have a problem with is that we cannot have initiatives that say, you know what, we need to buy local, we need to buy domestic. That cannot be something that we promote because we can be sued in the world tribunal. Can you talk a bit about this whole idea of the loss of sovereignty of this nation when it comes to promoting your domestic production or domestic consumption?
Well, essentially, the WTO, the World Trade Organization, ties your hands when it comes to what they like to call a barrier to free trade, which means trying to protect yourselves and protect your own industries. When it comes to, for example, several years ago, there was a large portion of contaminated chicken being shipped over here from China. And we as a nation tried to put some regulations, some inspections on that chicken. China, in turn, sued us with the WTO, which has power which supersedes our own constitution, and we lost, and we have no choice but to bring this chicken and continue accepting these imports from China. These are the types of things that other nations can do under the strong fist of the WTO. We really have no choice but to accept what they give us when we sign these agreements.
And to me, that just sounds plain dumb, Peter. Because, you know, here in this country, we're perfectly capable of producing enough chicken, I think. I think we're capable of producing enough beef and all of that stuff. We should be able to. If we've got to get it from a place like China that has very poor inspection standards, I think we got some problems beyond just a little trade agreement.
We certainly do, and we are certainly capable of producing enough chicken in this country. The difference is that we have things such as minimum wage. We have unions. We have things that allow China, which has none of these things, to produce chicken at a much lower rate, or South Korea in this case. And so these corporations, essentially, once they're allowed to buy from these other countries and get their meat from there, they really have to do this, because if they don't, one of their competitors will, and they'll undersell them, and they're gonna have to sell out.
So what's the point in all of this? I mean, you know, when you stop and you look at this from a working person's perspective, which is what I am, this competition against desperate nations, this competition against low-wage nations, to me doesn't seem to be all that well thought out.
No, it's really something that we're looking at where we've got politicians working in the interest of their lobbyists. Some of these decisions, and I'm looking at, you know, television reports and newspapers telling us that President Obama is saying this, or, you know, whatever senator is saying this about these trade agreements. And if you take even President Obama, for example, as few as 3 or 4 years ago, he was against this bill. It's a Korean free trade agreement.
Yep.
Now that he's in office, he's changed his mind. Why, we can't be sure, but we have to consider maybe that he's looking out for the better interests of the people who funded his campaign. And at that point, you're really looking at both politicians and the richest people in the country all looking out for each other. And, you know, those are the real people that gain, and it's not the American public.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Peter Crawford from Economy and Crisis. Economyandcrisis.org is the website. You know, that's an interesting thought. But, you know, could it be another thing? I hear a lot of talk about foreign policy. And there was a guy who was like an assistant treasury secretary under Reagan years ago, a guy named Paul Craig Roberts, who had an interesting quote that that really stuck in my head. And he said that we're the only country in the world that takes our wealth for granted, and that we give this wealth away for nebulous foreign policy aims. So basically saying that we use trade as a way to, you know, kind of shape our foreign policy. Can you see some of these trade agreements being part of that, and also looking down the road to the Pacific nations that are going to be coming soon?
You know, I think that may have been true in the 80s under Reagan. At this point, it's hard for me to imagine that we're putting our foreign policy in front of our economic welfare, but it's definitely very possible. I do know that this particular Korean free trade agreement, you know, will not be the last one. You mentioned the Pacific with the Panama, which is on the table right now, and
Colombia,
possibly in the future, even Colombia. So it's a multitude of reasons, but I have no doubt that could have been a factor over the last 20 to 30 years.
And Colombia, you know, I look at Colombia and I go, really? Are we talking about that? Have we gotten that business friendly? Because I know during the election we kept hearing about, oh, we need to be business friendly. And I keep thinking, have we gotten so business friendly that throwing union members and union leaders out of airplanes or pulling them off buses and shooting them in the head, those are the kind of country we want to deal with.
Yeah, it's really hard to imagine what we're thinking at that point. I'm not sure what types of imports we're hoping to increase from Colombia or what we're hoping to send over there. I think, you know, everyone's got their fair share of coffee on the kitchen table. I'm not sure that we stand to gain anything other than an excess of imports that we already have.
Yeah, a little cocaine and coffee keep everybody stimulated, I guess.
I guess we're a tired nation, right?
Yeah. Well, we're going to be, because we're going to be working 20 hours a day like the Chinese if we don't stop these kind of things from happening. And
exactly.
And to me, that's the really troublesome part of this. As a nation, we have, throughout the 20th century, we have made advancements for the working class. We've created a large middle class that really now is under attack because of agreements like NAFTA, like this, you know, really pitting us against desperate nations.
That's exactly right, and it's something that needs to be brought to the public's attention, because I don't think that everyone is necessarily aware what these free trade agreements and how disastrous they can be for the economy. It's something that is kind of just thrown out in the air and discussed briefly, and these are some of the most major impactual issues that are damaging our economy on a day-to-day basis.
And this trade agreement isn't going to be free. As I understand, South Korea, they're one of the many countries that have a value-added tax, I think somewhere around 10%.
It's exactly 10%. That's correct. And that's something else. It's really, we're looking at a situation where we're going to have imports coming into the country where we have no ability to regulate or to tax them. And on the other end, because they have a VAT, a value-added tax, they're going to be able to both gain a 10% refund on exports that go out of the country and also tax us 10% on imports going into their country.
So basically we're talking about a tariff.
It's essentially a tariff, but not exactly in those terms.
So why don't we go after putting a VAT tax on?
A VAT is something that's been discussed for years and years in this country. It's also been battled and fought against. Basically, what a value-added tax means is that at each level where a product is produced, it's taxed for what it's how far it's gone along the line.
Right.
So if a store has an item that it purchased from a manufacturer, it pays a tax on what it purchased. And then when the public purchases that from the store, the tax they pay is only on the difference in the upcharge of the store's given you.
Right.
What this means on a nation-to-nation basis is that because it's being produced in other countries, they're allowed to give the full value-added tax on imports going into their country.
And
now, why we don't have one, that's a political mixed mesh right now, and a lot of people are for it, a lot of people are against it. In this case, certainly it would even things out.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I'm in favor of having trade barriers that say, you know what, if this widget that I'm buying has 50 cents worth of labor in it, and it cost you 10 cents to make in South Korea, you're going to pay a 40-cent tariff.
Exactly.
So we level the playing field. Last question I've got for you, Peter Crawford. In going down the road, what do we do to stop this? Because I think at some point it's going to take folks like you, people like me, our listeners, to get out in the streets, to call their representatives, to do all the hard work to get something like this stopped.
It's really going to be up to the public at some point to try to influence our leaders' decisions. I don't think that, like I said, enough people are educated on the issue. I don't think that they're making their voices heard quite enough, and that could be said about a number of issues. But this is something that really does affect every working man in the middle class, everyone trying to work in this nation and make a better life for themselves. So I think probably the best way is to make sure that if you see an issue like this Korean Free Trade Agreement that you don't agree with, contact your representative. Write a letter. Enough letters do make a difference. It does influence the people that you voted for, that you put in office. They work for you. They need to remember that. They need to remember that they don't work for their lobbyists. They don't work for multinational corporations. They work for the people that put them in office, and that is us.
That's it. And I got to be honest, I'm wondering where the people who ran on the T-Twizzler platform, where they're going to fall on this, because they ran on this whole Buy American. They ran on this whole pro-jobs, pro-American jobs platform. So I'm going to be kind of interested to see where they fall on this discussion.
It's certainly something to look forward to when you see someone running on a topic that you agree with, and you hope that they stick with it once they're in office.
Yeah, we'll see how much campaign cash fills their coffer. Peter Crawford, I appreciate your time. The website economyincrisis.org. There's a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. Peter, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Rick.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Where family values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show. The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Come on, Obama. Do it. Stand up, stand tall, stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizen United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections. Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but, hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
You have to turn America blue. Now let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show.
Yeah, you look at these trade deals, and I got to be honest, you know, it all depends on who your master is. You know, it's very difficult to serve two masters. And you look at all the lobbyist money that goes into lobbying Congress. You look at all the campaign cash that goes into getting reelected. I had a friend who was a congressman. He said, look, he said, at the end of the day, you know, that $20,000 donation by this company or that company or this person or that never bought my vote. It bought my ear so that they had 5 minutes to explain their position. Because understand, our congressmen, our senators, the people at the state level, all the politicians in this whole game, they're constantly raising money because there's another election down the road. They're constantly raising money. So they've constantly got to make these phone calls year round, going to these fundraising dinners, going to these fundraising breakfasts. They have to do all this stuff all the time. So you pick up the phone, you call, you know, Billy Joe Bob or whoever and say, hey man, you know, you want to donate to our PAC? Yeah, I'll donate, but you know, I got this problem. Maybe you got a couple of minutes that I can explain it to you. So you sit there and you listen to the problem and you made a good argument, and the check comes in, and that argument is in your head. Because understand, you can't be an expert on every single issue out there. And there's an awful lot going on. So the people who have their ear, the folks who are filling their coffers, those are the people who have the better opportunity of convincing them one way or another, swaying them just a little bit. Not completely changing their ideology, not completely changing their worldview, but maybe, you know, hey, just a little slight nudge, a little slight deviation, a little slight change. Just a thought. The big news today, evidently Cindy Crawford was at a fundraising event on Monday for Mitt Romney, which has the news media going nuts because if you remember, Cindy Crawford, the actress and supermodel, she supported Barack Obama in 2008. So they're all a Twitter because, oh, this supermodel, maybe she's going to walk away from Obama. And, you know, her people are saying, wait a minute. She just showed up because she's friends with Tag. Evidently, Mitt Romney, Mitzi, has named his son Tag, T-A-G-G. I guess they got it out of the same book that the Palins got Trig from. I don't know. But anyway, interesting day for Mitzi. He raised $10.25 million in one day of phone banking in Las Vegas. I got to be honest. I would like to have that day. If I could get $10.25 million in one day of phone banking, wow. In fact, that's more than three times his committee's lowball prediction. So he did very well. And look, you know, he's going to need a lot of money. Because up until then, you had Michelle Bachmann, who was doing very, very well. She is yet to name when she's going to run. But Mitt Romney's saying it's a big kickoff for them, for their fundraising effort, and they're doing pretty well. Mitch Daniels still hasn't gotten the nod from Mama. So no word from Mama yet. So I'm sure he's knocking on the door going, can I, Mom? Can I, honey? Please, pretty please. And she's probably, holding out for her pound of flesh. So it's kind of a good negotiation thing there. The power structure being shown. Michelle Bachmann, she's checking her stash of medications, wants to make sure she's got enough meds to stay semi-sane, kind of keep it together throughout the election process. But she hasn't announced that. I'm sure that's coming soon. But again, I think she's going to have to. I think she's going to be one of those people who has to, just to get the former presidential candidate title behind her name. Paul Ryan has said that he's going to stay in the House. He's not going to run for U.S. Senate there in Wisconsin with Herb Kohl stepping down. Because what's going to happen is former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson, George W. Bush's Health and Human Service Secretary, he's going to run for Wisconsin's for the GOP there in Wisconsin for the Senate. So interesting numbers there. As you know, over the weekend, Mike Huckleberry, he's going to stick with his Fox gig. I think that pays somewhere around $500,000 a year. So he's doing pretty well. Donald Trump, of course, is licking his thin skin. He's decided to stay right where he's at, making a whole boatload of money. And we knew he would. Evidently, he gets somewhere in the a nice chunk of change. They're saying $50 million a year from his entertainment ventures, whatever that means. He's got a whole line of menswear and speaking fees. He's doing quite well. And again, this was just, I said it from the beginning, and you had to know it. You had to know that Trump was in this just to say, hey, look at me. Let's see how much free press and free PR and free media I can get to promote myself so the TV show does better. And NBC, they were out there pushing him. Go ahead, push The Apprentice. Yeah. I still love that press club dinner, though. I still love the steam that was coming out of his nostrils. That will stick with me for a while because it shows just how some people can dish it out. But I guess our friend Mr. Trump cannot. And then for the another presidential candidate, he's now officially in. Hasn't taken long for him to stumble and fall. In fact, Charles Krauthammer has said that Gingrich is done. Newt Gingrich is done for finally saying something that he's always believed but can't say out loud anymore. He's basically dead in the water, and I think he was dead before he even announced. I don't think he had a chance. But he's going to endure some T-Twizzler menacing. And what I found interesting is that the one called him a disgrace, told him he was embarrassing himself and he should get out. And to be honest, I love the fact that the T-Twizzlers are mistreating poor Nudie. I kind of like it because I do blame him for most of what's going on right now. He was, in my opinion, one of those guys who started this whole thing. He was part of that whole changing of the guard, if you will, in 94. He was one of that whole push at making politic something that you dug in and it was war to them more than it was about the country. It was about politics more than it was about governing. And you knew that from them right from the beginning. You got that sense right from the beginning. And what I find interesting is now it's gone so far beyond him. It's passed him by. So he's done such a good job that it's left him in the dust. Because understand, what he said about Ryan's plan is true. You're talking about right-wing social engineering. He's not wrong. It is what it is. We are in the process of changing this country into conservative world, into this think tank vision of what this country should have been, but never was. And we keep seeing this rewriting of history of how, you could go, you were free. You could do whatever you want. Government did nothing. which isn't true. But it's one of these myths that just keep being pushed out there. But Gingrich is right. It is right-wing social engineering. And he has taken a massive beating. A massive beating. And you know the health care bill? And I go back to this often. Because Gingrich is one of those people who I truly believe, in his heart of hearts, probably doesn't think this health care bill that Obama got passed is a bad thing. Because it does mandate personal responsibility. And it's something you used to hear an awful lot out of Gingrich over. But you don't hear it anymore. Because it's one of their talking points. Well, we can't mandate this stuff. But they were in favor of it before. So I just find it really kind of interesting on how far the Republican Party has gone to the extreme, especially with regards to Newt Gingrich. It's just amazing to me. The other interesting story today about Gingrich is that he and his wife, Callista, Tiffany's, the fancy jewelry place, somewhere around $500,000. And my first thought was, you owe as much as $500,000 to a jewelry store? Is he back to his cheating ways? Because sometimes women, for forgiveness, they need some remuneration. So maybe, to keep quiet, maybe some hush money, maybe. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. Because $500,000 on jewelry, I don't care what your income level is, a lot of money to have revolving debt of $500,000 on a credit card, a revolving charge account with 500 grand on it. The only one I think dumb enough to do that is Paris Hilton, only because she doesn't know any better. But interesting enough. And finally, for our presidential, to check how the races are going, Rick Santorum is back in the news. And you gotta love Tricky Ricky, always spewing things that he has no clue about. And call me strange, but I'm not gonna tell a guy who was captured for 5.5 years, tortured for those 5.5 years. I'm gonna give him the credit of knowing what enhanced interrogation measures will do. I'm going to give McCain the benefit of the doubt of knowing how far the human body will go before they tell you anything you want to hear to stop the pain. Not necessarily anything credible, but anything you want to hear. And Tricky Ricky said, talking about how the information was obtained and how we ended up killing bin Laden. He said, everything I've read shows that we would not have gotten this information as to who this man was if he had not been gotten information from people who were subjected to enhanced interrogation, according to Santorum. And so this idea that we didn't ask that question while Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was being waterboarded, he, being John McCain, doesn't understand how enhanced interrogation works. No, I think he understands quite well, Rick. I do. I think, I think Mr. Santorum, I think he does understand quite well. I think he's been through it. So I think he knows from a much more intimate perspective than I'm sure you in your Virginia house could possibly. Or me, for that instance. I have no idea most people I know, they're going to tell you whatever they're going to tell you. Just stop. But anyway, Santorum goes on to say, I mean, you break somebody, and after they're broken, they become cooperative. And that's when you get this information. One thing led to another, and led to another, and that's how we ended up with bin Laden, he said. He goes on to say, maybe McCain has better information than I do, but from what I've seen, it seems pretty clear that, but for those cooperative witnesses who were cooperative as a result of enhanced interrogations, we would not have gotten bin Laden. Again, I go back to this. I'm going to side with McCain on this. I think after 5.5 years of being tortured, or I'm sorry, we don't use torture anymore, sorry, enhanced interrogation techniques. I think after 5.5 years of being tortured, he would have a much more intimate knowledge, a much better handle on what is possible than our buddy Tricky Ricky, who, again, I think is another one of these guys who's in this to fill his campaign coffers, put a little title behind his name so he can get big speaking fees and big, a nice cushy think tank job. And every couple of years, we're going to have to endure him coming out and spewing his nonsense. Anyway, We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012, and we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high-interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life. Get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's Conservative Alerts.
Well, you know, our tweet of the day, again, you know, I can't make this stuff up. It's impossible to make this up. The guy over at FreedomWorks, Spiels on Wheels, he tweeted, Pennsylvania Senator Ward told me today that SB1 is too expensive, with a question mark. I'm trying to figure that out. He says, funny, the PSEA and the other labor groups are calling it a billion-dollar cut. I'm sorry, I don't remember PSEA or any labor union calling SB1 a cut to anything. In fact, what I remember most people saying is that it is a massive increase in spending at a time when we're cutting K-12 education. So on one hand, let me explain it to you here, Spiels, since obviously you're not quite getting the concept. On one hand, our governor here, Tom Corporate, he wants to slash $1 billion from K-12 education. Wants to slash and burn that. That's going to happen. And then from what's left out of that, he wants to set up these little charter things and all these little vouchers for these kids to get these lottery tickets that nobody's going to validate. And we're going to end up spending money on people who are already sending their kids to private schools. So what's going to happen is down the road, we're going to spend another $1 billion on propping up a private education system. So the profiteers who fund your salary there, Speely, they're going to be the ones who do very well. The poor kids, they're the ones who are screwed in all of this. Again, and I find it interesting on a day like today, the day that Brown versus Board of Education was decided, that you have chosen to show your ignorance of this whole topic And again, you know, as many Republican senators as I've talked to who keep telling me that this voucher program, this big lottery ticket program is going to be the ticket for all those poor kids who are struggling in those failing schools, and that this is some grand civil rights movement, that somehow these golden tickets, these wonderful vouchers where these kids in the inner city are going to have nowhere to take them, that this is it. This is how we're going to turn back generations of segregation. And I look at this idiot who's the general manager of a TV station, I think it's 29 down in Philadelphia, who came out and said, basically he said, well, you know, SB1, it's not the right bill, you know, and it's not going to work, but I'm going to support it anyway. Well, here's his words.
SB1 is not a perfect bill, nor will it fix our failing school system.
Hey, you know, it's not a perfect bill. Not perfect. Well, you know, it's not perfect. But it's not going to work either, which makes me go, then why in the hell are we doing it? Oh, yeah. Fund the profiteers. The guy from the TV station, again, had another dumb comment. And you go, why do you put someone like this on television? You know, again, I guess maybe it wasn't written well enough for him. But here he said this, and this just blew my mind.
What other business pays you more money to keep failing?
What other business pays you to keep failing? Because education is failing. You know, all the people that I deal with all day long who went to public school, you know, who are productive members of society, paying their taxes, raising their families, doing all that stuff, all of those people, the vast majority of the people in this country, they all were failed. They all went through a system that was a horrible disgrace, and it failed. And to answer his question, the dumb one.
What other business pays you more money to keep failing?
Banks? Did anybody remember the banks? We gave a whole bunch of money to the banks. Did I mention the banks? Does anybody remember the $750 billion TARP money that we handed out? Here, banks, you failed. Have some money. Doesn't seem all that good to me there, Speely. And this idea that, well, you know, the senator told me it's too expensive. ? What? Amazing stuff. And like I said, today is the day that the Supreme Court unanimously handed down the Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka case, ruling that segregation was unconstitutional, basically going against the Plessy versus Ferguson separate but equal decision. But I look at what's going on. And now understand, the vast majority of schools are doing very well. We have seen improvements in the vast majority of schools. And you walk around this area and you talk to parents, and most of the parents that I talk to in the public schools where my kids go to school, they're very happy. The schools are working very well. Understand, in poverty-ridden areas, and this is where maybe Brown versus Board of Education didn't go far enough, in poverty areas, it doesn't matter if you're white or black or Hispanic or any of that. In poverty areas, you're going to have troubled schools. It's going to need more resource. It's going to need more people, more time. It's going to need more intimate interaction. And, yeah, it's going to take some money. And I love this frame that the radical right keeps throwing out there. Well, you know, we just can't keep throwing money at a problem. Well, in the areas that we do, in the very wealthy areas, the school districts are very, very good. In the areas that in the school districts where we starve the school, very, very bad. Now, I'm not telling you it's conclusive. I'm just saying the areas who have lots of money per student, doing very well. The areas without, not so well. I think, you know, the rational person says, you know, maybe if we bumped it up a little bit, had some Saturday classes, had maybe longer school years, you know, did some innovative things that way instead of, hey, I got an idea. Let's wreck the entire system. Let's tear it all down. Let's burn it to the ground. Let's chuck it. Let's fire sale it off. Let's be like the Dennis Ross guy from Florida and say, hey, you know what? Let's sell it off. Let's liquidate it all because a small percentage of the schools are not doing very well. I'm asking you, in this area, are you willing to give up your local public school? Because what you're going to do is you're going to drain the resources from each individual schools, because they love to say this, and this is their little caveat thing. This is their little argument. Well, you know, the per pupil amount of money isn't going to go down any. So it's not going to cost you anything. The per pupil amount of money will be the same. We're just dividing it differently. Yet the heating costs don't go down in the public school. The teacher salaries don't go down. The maintenance cost of the building doesn't go down. The energy costs, all of those costs, none of that comes down. What goes down is the number of students and the money that used to go with them. That's what the right wants. They want to be able to set up their little profit motive schools where they can come in, set up their little charters or their little alternative schools, or better yet, these insane cyber schools. Let's put all these kids online. Basically take the University of Phoenix model, the Walden University, and all of those for-profit colleges that are online, and use that model to educate our kindergartners. That's a great idea, don't you think? Lots of profit, very low overhead, no brick and mortar. What could be better than that? And this way, all those people who homeschool, we can get money for them. But our friends at FreedomWorks, who think that SB1 is just the greatest thing on earth, they don't think about that stuff. It's just that, you know, those labor unions call it a $1 billion cut. Jeez. I gotta ask the question, and maybe it's going too far. But I wonder what private school he went to. Because hopefully our public schools did a much better job than the education that guy got. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280, or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012, The Rick Smith Show.
had to hear the scream. I love that little scream in there. Yeah, you go, how exactly did they get him to do that? Was that kind of like a vice? You put the little boys in a vice and give it a good turn every once in a while to get up that high? Amazing stuff. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Here's a good story. A really good story out of Ohio. You got to love Ohio. My home state is getting, they're almost as bad as Texas. You know, if Texas ever seceded, there's part of me that says they should take Ohio with them. You know, good, bye. Evidently, the Republican-led House has passed a bill. Now, tell me if you think this is a good idea, because I'm kind of on the fence about this one. Not really, but I'm just making it, trying to make it interesting. The Ohio legislature has said that bringing a gun into a bar is now perfectly legal. If you want to carry your concealed weapon into the bar, restaurant, or open area like a sporting event that serves alcohol, you should be able to. And they're going to push this along. Now, you've got the gun lobby who's been saying, yeah, we want people to be able to carry guns at parks. We want to be able to carry their gun in school. You know, whenever they go to a government building and see one of those politicians, we can get rid of them. Carry it at university, you know, when you go to church. Because what, you know, when I think of getting all dressed up in your Sunday best to go to church, you know, I always wish that I could have the accessory of my gun. You know, I wish I could have it right there, you know, for everyone to see with my nice tie and my jacket. Of course, my gun. And, of course, you know, when I take my kids to the daycare centers, I'd love to take my gun with me, because what's better around a bunch of 2-3-year-olds than guns or 5-year-olds? What's better than that? I mean, especially after the stories we've been hearing lately. But, you know, that's what the NRA wants. They want schools and parks and government buildings, university campuses, churches, daycare centers. They're actually lobbying for that. But here's what the NRA doesn't think is a good idea. Taking guns into bars. The NRA is saying, we don't think it's such a good idea. Republican Representative Danny Bupp, B-U-B-P, you figure out how to say it. He's the key sponsor of this legislation. He said the bill is necessary to make sure law-abiding citizens have equal footing with criminals. He says you can't always count on law enforcement to protect you. You have to protect yourself in the bar. So when you're an a-hole and you start a fight and someone smacks you around, this way you can shoot them. I'm guessing that's the rationale. Now, this report went to a whole bunch of bar owners who basically said, look, it's not a good idea. People and guns don't mix. They asked the Irish pub owner, Kevin O'Neill. He said guns and bars are bad. Guns and alcohols don't mix. Went to another saloon, TJ's Saloon, and said, what do you think? They said, that's a bad idea. It's always bad. There's nothing good about having guns and alcohol together. Nothing good at all. And even the NRA, no, not in favor of it all. But, you know, the Ohio House says, we want people to be able to take their guns into bars. Now, never mind that the bar owners don't want it. Never mind that the police don't want it. Never mind that the Ohio State Legislature, they want it. In fact, the city of Columbus, their city council, who, to be honest, no flaming left-wing conspiracies there, they have unanimously passed a resolution calling on Governor Kasich to veto the bill if it ever gets there. And according to council spokesmen in Cleveland, Athens, and Union City, there are similar resolutions. So you're going to see a lot of the local communities saying, no, Ohio, if this passes, will join Tennessee, Arizona, Georgia, and Virginia as states that permit guns and alcohol to be right, you know, saddle up to the bar with your firearm and your bottle of whatever it is you so choose. I got to be honest, I don't know that I feel all that comfortable. And not even because, you know, I'm against guns, but because I know people when they get drunk. They do dumb things, and then they want to fight. And then someone gets beat up, and they go, oh, well, I'm going to shoot you. And then they shoot their gun. And they never hit the guy that they're supposed to hit. Never. They always hit some innocent idiots who's sitting on the bar stool minding his own business, which would be me. That's why I'm against it. So again, you take this stuff back to radical self-interest, because it would be just my luck. On that day, I'd be sitting on the bar stool and some halfwit would, you know, go shooting off his gun and hit me. Again, you know, you come out of our studio here in Harrisburg. The other night there was almost a, you know, big riot in the alley. And that's one of the things we were talking about to each other. Look out, somebody's probably got a gun. So again, another great idea coming out of Ohio. You want to hear another good idea coming out of Ohio? I mean, Ohio's full of it. Kasich is now pushing this this contract with a company in Los Angeles, this consulting firm, that they're going to pay a monthly retainer of $200,000 over this year-long contract, and this Los Angeles company can earn up to $13 million in incentives and fees. Now, understand, and this is what bothers me, they're going to pay this private for-profit corporation upwards of $13 million at a time when they're slashing education, at a time when they're handing out massive amounts of corporate dollars to the big corporations, big tax breaks to them. They're talking about privatizing their state stores. They're talking about fire sailing off a good portion of their roads. They've taken a bunch of money and they're putting it into this private public corporation that is going to hand out all this money to, am I the only one who thinks that it's just plain nuts that this guy's still in office? I'm hoping that they recall him at some point. I'm hoping that people wake up in that state. But here's the thing. They're going to be paying this $13 to $15 million, it says, to get, and I can't make this up, to get a consultant to tell them how to make more money from their casinos. That's it. I'm dumbfounded. So we're going to cut education. We're going to cut health care, because they did away with their Buckeye Care, like we had adult basic here. They did away with that. They're doing stupid things like leaving prison guard towers empty. They're stealing collective bargaining rights away from teachers and firemen and police officers. They're doing all of that stuff. Yet they've got money to hire a consultant to tell them how to make more money off the casinos. I got to be honest. I always thought casinos were a license to print money. Man, you know, how did we get here? You know, I look at today being election day, and the question is, how did we get to this place where we look at someone like Kasich and go, oh, yeah, that's who we wanted. We look at somebody like Corbett. Oh, yeah, that's who we wanted. You look at all of these attacks that are going on. How are we as a working class? How are we as people who punch a clock and collect a paycheck? How are we not looking at them with a jaundiced eye? How are we not looking at them and saying, you know what? Never again. Yet you look at the results tonight. You know, the Republicans did, you know, the insane Republicans did very well. I'm still trying to figure it out. Really still trying to figure it out. So the election results are in. Most of them are in. It looks like a pretty interesting night. The woman we had on last night, Kathleen Bockfar, didn't do very well. It looks like she's down by about 20,000 votes as of last number. Mike Fedor, the guy we had on last night, he didn't fare well either. Lost by a couple hundred votes. But again, you know, ran a good campaign, as you know, I'm sure everyone put their heart into it and did a nice job going out there. So now we're going to move into the next phase, which will be next November. It's the reason we play the game. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what Republicans should have been doing, creating jobs. Remember that? Jobs. We're back after this.
Proud to
defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Things have failed out, people get sold out. Things have failed out, people get sold out.
Those are chants from the streets of Madison, Wisconsin on May 14, 2011. That chant was brought to Madison by professional firefighters of Wisconsin President Malin Mitchell, who heard it during a stop in Portland, Oregon. After Mitchell saw the passion and fire that was inspired by Madison on the streets of Portland, he promised that he would bring the chant back. Portland, like many other cities and states around the country, have seen people taking to the streets, inspired by the demonstrations that they saw in Madison, where tens of thousands, day in and day out, protested proposals of Governor Scott Walker that they believed were attacks on not only unions, but also the middle class. Wisconsin State Senator John Erpenbach, who was one of the 14 Democratic senators that left the state after a collective bargaining stripping bill was presented by Walker, said Wisconsinites need to show the rest of the world what they can do.
It started here in Madison, Wisconsin, and it's going to end here in Wisconsin. We are going to show the nation what we are all about.
The fight in Wisconsin has expanded to include other parts of Walker's bill. During Saturday's rally, multiple people representing various interests spoke. One was dairy farmer Sarah Lloyd, who said the budget is bad for Wisconsin family farmers.
I work off of the farm to bring health insurance back to the farm, and my sister-in-law works in a school as a teacher to bring health insurance back to the farm. So when we cut benefits to public employees and we cut badger care, we hurt family farms.
According to Wisconsin Alliance of Retired Americans President Leon Brzezinski, the budget also directly impacts tens of thousands of Wisconsin seniors. One major cut is to the homestead tax credits.
Governor cut the homestead tax credit, which will increase taxes for seniors who have low incomes. It pierces over 90,000 Wisconsin seniors and disabled residents on the highly successful senior care drug program to sign up for Medicare Part D. That will significantly add out-of-pocket expenses for many of these folks at several thousand dollars a year more.
The uniting message between all the speakers on Saturday was that it's time for Wisconsinites to move the fight from the capital city of Madison to all of the surrounding communities. Opponents of Walker are currently working on 6 recall campaigns that, if at the least 3 are successful, could see the power of the Senate shift from GOP to Democrat.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left, reaching out of poverty. Father, son, left the candy on, blue dental, head is great. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, the right keeps telling us that, you know, we need to deregulate. We need to get rid of those job-killing regulations. And I always ask the question, well, what about the worker-killing lack of regulation or the lack of enforcement? I never hear anything about that. But, you know, here in this state especially, with the drillers who are now basically going, out on their own, and occasionally they get caught, what would regulations do? How would we create jobs with regulations? That's why I've asked Carrie Leiterson, author over at In These Times, who's written a piece, Chemical Industry Regulation Would Create, Not Kill Jobs, is the name of the article. There's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Carrie's name. Carrie, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, thank you.
You know, back in November, the Republicans ran on the platform of, we're going to create jobs. I haven't seen anything, but what you've laid out seems rational.
Yeah, well, this was a pretty impressive report by the Blue-Green Alliance about the chemical industry in particular and the Toxic Substances Control Act, which would put much stricter regulations on chemicals, and really, I mean, stricter compared to what we have now, which in a lot of cases is almost nothing, but still would be, you know, I think by anyone's definition, totally reasonable. And the main thing it does really is ask the industry to just provide information about the chemicals they're using, and then let the EPA decide, use that information to decide if they pose a risk to people or not. So the industry has been saying that that requirement, which is, you know, pretty much an information provision requirement that could lead to strict regulations just to protect public health, that would kill jobs because it would increase their costs and might ultimately prevent them from using some of the chemicals in the same ways or disposing of their wastes in the ways that they do now. But ultimately, this report says, and this is something you see in really all industries, but this is a great example from the chemical industry, that stricter regulations really would have great potential to create jobs because it would drive innovation, it would force more research and development, it would create jobs just in the research and development alone, you know, probably in a wide range of skill sectors from engineers and scientists with PhDs down to manufacturing jobs and, you know, carrying out the research and development. And it would also keep the industry more competitive internationally because a lot of European countries already have stricter standards than us in terms of chemicals and in other sectors also. So they're actually going to lose those markets if they don't submit themselves to stricter regulations in the U.S.
Yeah, if you don't act a little proactively. That's an interesting take on it, though, that, you know, maybe we could get rid of some of the chemicals that we already know are dangerous and are difficult to dispose of. Maybe get rid of some of the, like we did with lead paint back in the 70s, you know, and move towards something more environmentally friendly, a little more green, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's and you know, it's not that the law has even gone that far yet. It's literally just asking for more information and more cooperation from the industry in regulating. And, you know, it's kind of similar. I was just doing another blog today about the news in the past few days that the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers was working with the American Power Company, one of the big owners of coal-fired power plants, to defeat the clean air rules that would have put stricter regulations and more quickly for mercury and dioxins and lead and other very toxic compounds coming from coal-fired power plants. And they, the union, you know, unfortunately in this case really bought into the industry's contention that stricter limits on coal-fired power would kill jobs. But I think that's one of the areas where, you know, the chemical study was a little lesser known or lesser examined, but so many groups have done studies showing the potential for green job creation driven by stricter regulations of air pollution from coal-fired power, in particular from cement plants, in all different realms for those same reasons, that it'll require new things to be done, and generally doing new things creates more jobs than just maintaining the very efficient, you know, in a lot of cases very automated systems that are already underway.
Yeah, I would, instead of stricter regulation, I would say saner regulations,
right.
One that makes sure that the water
yeah.
that I drink and the air that I breathe are clean, and that we don't have all of those costs down the road with people getting cancer. And one of the things you said here, where we're asking companies, you know, if they would comply, and I go back to the at the end of the day, we the people have the right to regulate them, and we should be setting the ground floor to make sure that they do the right thing in their own best interest, even if they won't.
You would think that's a good point. It's a good way to put it.
because, you know, at the end of this, in the example that was in your article, they talk about how paints are made. And you know, instead of making it with toxic fumes and plastics and oil and all of this stuff, maybe make it with vegetables. I guess that was their example on how you would be able to kind of move over and have a sustainable product and still create jobs.
Yeah, and I think that was just one little example. And, you know, whenever you try something new, I mean, there may be complications you didn't expect. It may not work out. But the whole point is trying new things, because that's what drives job creation and research, and it keeps our country intellectually competitive with other countries. So it's really a great thing in so many ways to have regulation that's in the public interest also drive, you know, I guess, what industries, if they were really honest about, if they really actually walk the walk, you know, say is best about capitalism. But the thing is, when you say that, you know, we as the public have the ability or have the right to regulate these industries, we do obviously, you know, at least theoretically through the electoral system, but since these things are so complicated, when industries are able to, you know, convince a major union that something will kill jobs, that's disturbing. That's where, you know, money and power and all these other complicating factors, get in the way of our ability, you know, without every person being an expert in all these industries to actually act and vote in their own best interests.
Yeah, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Carrie Leiterson. She's written a nice piece over at In These Times, Chemical Industry Regulations Would Create, Not Kill Jobs. There's a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. In the piece, you write something interesting that I don't think most people know. You write current requirements force the Environmental Protection Agency to prove a chemical is harmful before regulating it, rather than forcing industry to study chemicals and prove that they're not harmful. So what you're writing here, if I'm getting this right, is that it's on us to prove that the chemical that they're using is bad for us instead of them proving to us that it's not bad for us.
Yeah, basically, I mean, us, in terms of us being the EPA, which, you know, represents us, and of course, especially since cuts during the Bush administration and even regardless, you know, most of these, I mean, you can say the same thing for the Department of Labor. So many departments just don't have the resources to go out and find and prove all these problems. That's why, you know, there really do need to be regulations that, force industry to be cooperative and you know to actually prove like the you know like food and drugs do prove that they aren't harmful rather than just go out pretty much unregulated and you know wait to see if maybe the government agencies find the time and resources to actually check them out.
So if we had sane policy, if we followed the path that the folks over at the Blue Green Alliance are proposing, how many jobs could be created in the next decade?
Oh, gosh, you know, I don't have the report in front of me, and I'm not remembering the number off the top of my head. Maybe you have it there, but it's a really substantial number, and you know, they were actually using conservative numbers. I'm sorry I don't have it on the tip of my tongue, but it'll be motivation for people to go check out the report. And again, that number is a conservative estimate, and when industry talk about jobs killed or jobs created by measures that they like, they usually include all the indirect and induced jobs. So, you know, whatever number you see in that report could actually probably even be exponentially bigger.
Yeah, they're saying 104,000 jobs would be created, which is a pretty substantial number. But then again, I guess you could make the argument, if you were a cynic, that by allowing the cancerous agents to get into the water and have polluted water and air, that we'd be creating a lot of jobs in the medical field by taking care of people.
I suppose. I don't think anyone's, the industry's making that argument, but I suppose if you wanted to be a real cynic, you could. But I honestly don't think there's any kind of, you know, conspiracy that goes that far. I think people, politicians and corporate people are just thinking in the very short term. And, you know, one thing that makes it difficult to regulate environmental toxins is that usually the health effects are fairly long range. So if someone gets cancer, you know, in 25 years, it's pretty much impossible to prove what actually caused it. Even if someone gets, you know, even if it's a shorter term effect, it's usually impossible to prove what caused it. So that's why we should be regulating these things on the precautionary principle that if we know that it likely could cause harm, even if we haven't proven that it has caused harm to X number of people, you know, it's in everyone's best interest and again, the interest of most likely of creating jobs to regulate that chemical or that toxin.
Which is why they say somewhere between 50 and 60,000 workers every year die of occupational disease.
Exposed to these same things that they're making without having been adequately checked out.
Mm-hmm. So last question I've got for you, you know, where do we go from here? What do we do? How do we change this?
Yeah, I mean, these are all tricky things because, you know, sometimes we're talking legislation, sometimes we're talking rulemaking, and, you know, the public involvement is a little bit indirect. Usually there are public, if it's a rulemaking thing, there'll be public comment periods. But anyway, to make a, I guess in the simplest sense, people need to just try to really stay aware of what's going on and to really be skeptical of the claims of industry and to sort of think creatively or long term about how what might be sold to us as a, you know, a limit on our quote unquote freedom or really on these corporations' freedom is actually an opportunity not only to protect our health but to stimulate our economy.
Or we could just live in a bubble. That would be easy as
right.
well. Carrie Leiderson, I appreciate the time. Again, the article over at In These Times. There's a link at our site at therickmithshow.com. I suggest taking a look at it. Carrie, thanks so much. I appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Shipping it offshore, do the job that you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Come on, Obama, do it. Stand up, stand tall, stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizen United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections. Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me.
Sitting here during the break, paying attention to the election results as they're coming in across the state. And the lady we had on last night, Catherine Bachvar, boy, she has come on like gangbusters here in the last 10 or 15 minutes, closing the gap to just a few thousand votes. Could be an interesting couple hours as we move forward. Also here in Dauphin County, for the county commissioner's race, it looks like George Hartwick's going to be the guy to carry the top seat on the Democratic side. Right now, the race with two precincts left to report between Eric Papenfuss and Wendy Jackson Dow, about 80 votes, 70-some votes separate them with Papenfuss having the lead. over in the Cumberland County side for the county commissioners, the team of Schultz and Hertzler, they won the election, though they will go against the Republicans in Cumberland County. An interesting kind of split where the team of Eichelberger and Wilson, actually Wilson lost to Barb Cross, who was the incumbent. So interesting turn of events there. But we're keeping an eye on some of the numbers. If you've got something on your mind, in fact, right now as I clicked on the refresh button, it looks like Catherine Bachvar has taken the lead by about 350 votes. They are split right down the middle, 50-50, with about 600 districts left to be counted, about 6.5% of the vote left to be counted. So that will absolutely be a major nail biter. As we come down to the closing hours, boy, I got to tell you, looking at that kind of a race split right down the middle. Wow. You got to love that. I mean, that's why these things are so exciting. Amazing. Today I met a guy who, and again, I've been railing for the last week and a half, for the last 2 weeks against this Scott Perry, the state rep from Dillsburg, and the bill that he's put forth, this House Bill 916. That basically is stealing unemployment compensation away from people who need it. A very destructive anti-worker bill. But again, when the industry writes the bill and you have a representative who's more than happy to hand in, someone else's work, some plagiarized work from the industry, who, they said, here's what we want. And he said, there you go. I got a problem with that. But I met this guy and he's been on and off unemployment for quite some time now. And he was explaining, he's fortunate. He's got a job. He's working a couple of days. He's making ends meet. But when he doesn't have work, he then reaches into the unemployment system to help him make his bills. And what's great about our system and why I think our system is very good is that you get an X amount of dollars and it doesn't really equate into weeks, but it equates into how much you use. Like this week, you work 2 or 3 days and you take a partial benefit. That means you'll have a partial benefit down the road. It extends the amount of weeks that you have. What this guy wants to do in Dillsburg, this Scott Perry, he wants to completely turn this thing upside down and really make it much more difficult for people to get unemployment compensation, wants to make it much more difficult in the event that you find a job and lose the job. And, because for some folks, it's first one, last one hired, first one off the job. So you work a couple of days, they may let you go. You work a couple of days, there may not be something. So you're constantly filing, constantly being part of the system. He wants to make this immensely more difficult. And one of the biggest parts of this is how they want to recalculate benefits. And the reason I brought up the guy I met today is that he's been on and off of work for the better part of a couple of years. So you go back to when September of 2008, when almost a million people lost their job. And then October, when several hundred thousand people lost their job. In November, when several hundred thousand people lost their job. In December, when several hundred more thousand people lost their job. And then January of 2009, when you had 600,000. In February, we had 600,000 or 700,000. And all of those people who lost their jobs, they went on unemployment. And maybe they had a job for a short time, and they went off unemployment, then they went back. However, what Perry wants to do is he wants to go back 3 years. Go back all those years. So let's say you were unlucky enough to lose that job back in 2008. And then, sometime in 2009, you got a little work and maybe you got laid off again. 2010, you got some work and now you've got a job full time and now you've lost that. And you've been out there plugging away, doing what you're supposed to do, trying to find work and trying to get back on your feet. But every step of the way, you got problems. What this bill is going to do is it's going to punish you by going back 3 years and taking the average of your wages in those 3 years, instead of saying in the last year, what was your highest quarter, to try and help you get by the rough patch. This is going to, in my estimation, someone like the guy I talked to today, it's going to cut his benefit in half. So when Scott Perry says we're going to save $193 million a year, what that word save means is steal from that guy that I met today. What that word save means is steal from the working people who are struggling to make ends meet. Steal it from them at a time when they need it the most. But here's the thing that gets me. That's what I expect from the Republican Party. You go back to the tax reform bill of 86 when Reagan pushed through taxing unemployment benefits. Another slap in the face. But this is where we have to stand together. This is where we have to stand up and fight back. And you look at, and again, you look at Scott Perry's press release. He said blatantly, right out in public, this legislation was written with direct input from the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry and the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Nothing about workers, nothing about representatives of workers, nothing about constituents, business. That's it. So I'm telling you, you got to call Scott Perry's office, tell him House Bill 808, dump it. He ran on the platform that he's going to create jobs. What he's going to do is he's going to destroy families with this. And now you look at this workers' comp bill that they're trying to ram through. And you got to love this. Under this Republican bill, you now have to go see the company doctor. This is what they want to push through. They want you to go to the company doctor for 180 days instead of 90 days. And as I was talking to somebody today, I said, you know, look, let's say you need to have surgery. And this is why this is another piece of this bill that is so bad. Let's say you need to have surgery or some invasive procedure. They're saying you can go get a second opinion from any doctor you want. But if that doctor that you go to disagrees and has a different course of action, has a different plan, well, let me read what the bill says verbatim, because it lays it out. It says, quote, should invasive surgery for an employee be prescribed by a physician or other health care provider so designated by the employee shall be permitted to receive an additional opinion from any medical provider of the employee's own choice. If the additional opinion differs from the opinion provided by the physician or health care provider so designated by the employer, you know, the company doctor, the employee shall determine which course of treatment to follow, provided that the second opinion provides a specific and detailed course of treatment. If the employee chooses to follow the procedures designated by the second opinion, such procedures shall be performed by one of the physicians or other healthcare providers so designated by the employer. For 180 days from the date, get this, from the date of the visit to the physician or other healthcare provider of the employer's own choice. Should the employee not comply with the foregoing, the employer will be relieved from liability for the payment for services rendered during the applicable period. So, if you don't go to the company doctor, if you don't follow their rules, they're going to kick you off. And you are going to be responsible. And your health insurance isn't going to pay for it because it's a workman's comp thing. They're trying to make this as insurance company friendly, as business friendly as they can, and as worker unfriendly as possible. Now, understand this. Stop and think about this for a second. You're going to go to the company doctor, and you're going to say, you know what? I don't agree with your assessment. I want a second opinion. So you go for your second opinion. The guy says, this is the treatment that I would do for you. This is how I would do it. Now you're supposed to go back to the company doctor and say, you know what? I found a guy who disagrees with you, but I have to treat with you for 180 days. What sense does that make? Truth of the matter is it makes no sense. But what it does is it handcuffs the employee and they know. These folks who write these bills know that most people don't have a union, most people don't have protection on the job, and they're going to do whatever the company doctor says because the company's pressuring them. The insurance provider for the company's pressuring them. The doctor's pressuring them. And if you don't, this stuff is important. You know, you go back to 96 when they rammed through the last major destructive bill. where it was it made it to where it's no longer the insurance company's responsibility to help you find work. It's yours, and they can make up these phantom jobs at phantom wages. So many people have been screwed by this system, and it is a broken system. And now they want more. They want to make it worse. Yet these are the people we elected to create jobs, not do this stuff. To create jobs, not steal unemployment from people who need it. To create jobs, not make injured workers suffer longer. To create jobs. It's that simple. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one, call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well. Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job. They're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Now to find out what's going on in the big city, Washington, D.C., our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much.
The big oil vote went down today. Not good news.
Right. 52-48. They didn't get the votes really necessary to pass the bill, even though that would look like a passing, but, you know, you need those 60 votes. Landrieu, Nelson, Begich went with the Republicans. Collins and Snow from Maine went with the Democrats.
Interesting. You know, you look at where the campaign money flows.
Yes, and as we know where the campaign for oil money flows, and we also know that Maine gets left out of it, in particular because they have such high heating costs, et cetera.
Our buddy Newt's got himself in a little trouble now, I guess.
Already. Well, the Newtster, there are these various breakfasts around town, and one is a conservative blogger's breakfast. Newt Gingrich attended that today, and he was complaining about his treatment yesterday, Sunday on Meet the Press. And, you know, he was saying he wasn't unprepared, it was too hard questions. Well, one of the organizations, I think it was Talking Points Memo, did a little survey and found out that he'd been on Meet the Press no less than 35 times. He knew exactly what he was getting himself into.
Two hard questions. What do you think is going to happen when he becomes president? Do you think that they're going to not ask him hard questions?
Exactly. But, of course, he's not going to become president. Of course, the press is now saying that he's totally self-imploded and all that kind of stuff. I don't think so. I don't think people really read what the press has to say about somebody. I think it'll depend how he does on the campaign trail. I don't think he's going to be the nominee, but I don't think he's, quote-unquote, imploded.
Well, I think he's sunk because the Tea Party people, I mean, you look at some of the treatment that he's gotten, and you know what? I think a lot of this treatment he's brought on himself, and this is the whole, this kind of politic he was one of the people who brought in. So he's kind of reaping what he sowed.
Well, he did bring in that. I mean, if you listen to the GOPAC tapes, that is what he sent around, and they were on cassette tapes, his GOPAC tapes. So, I mean, you know, that was the days in the early 90s. But he really clearly has, I think he still can have some impact, but it's going to be very tough against Romney's money raising.
Now, well, let's talk about Romney for a minute, because raised a boatload of money one day of making phone calls. I think he's probably going to be the guy. He's got that whole Romney Care thing going against him, but I think at the end of the day, he's got the big bucks.
Yes, he does. And I'll tell you, some of the Democrats I even talked to are not scared, but they said, listen, do not underestimate what that kind of money raising can actually do.
And if they put someone else on the ticket with him who's more palatable to the extreme right of the party, I think he's got a shot.
Well, yes, I think so. I think that there's also some rumors around town, and I'm hearing this from people who know what kinds of things they're up against and or not up against, that they are thinking about putting Rubio in for the Hispanic vote.
Well, that would be a slick move.
It would be a very slick move, and that's what we're hearing.
Interesting.
And I don't see it, even though Rubio says he's not doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to remember, when George H.W. Bush ran in 1980, he wasn't going to be vice president either. And when they asked, look what happened.
Exactly.
People suddenly
get a change of heart.
Yeah, well, you know, that number two spot looks awful promising when it's within reach. Our president's about to give a speech on the Middle East, I understand.
He is going to be giving a speech. It's going to be Thursday at the State Department. He will talk about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, but he is also going to say that there are, you know, four principles that he doesn't really want to get away from, and these include essentially a democracy, well, not quite a democracy, he's saying, but he's saying political and economic reforms, those are two of them, human rights and nonviolence, and that's where he's going with his speech. It'll be interesting because he believes that this is a unique opportunity, says the White House, and that this is a chance that couldn't have even been imagined 50 years ago.
Well, I mean, you better do something, because you look at what's going on over there with Syria, Pakistan. There's some real problems.
Big problems, and the European Union is working very hard with Syria and the United States on the Syrian issue, and they are thinking of putting in some more sanctions.
And what's going on with NATO and Pakistan right now?
Well, what's really interesting is a couple NATO helicopters were fired upon, and I guess fired back, got into a little bit of a fight there. And this has to do with the fact that Pakistan said they were over the line. Remember, the Pakistani parliament essentially passed something that said that they were going to fight any of this over-the-line kind of thing. So we'll see what happens if it escalates at all.
Yeah, we'll see. The White House has taken a position on the International Monetary Fund.
Yes, their position on the International Monetary Fund is that they want them to get it together, but they have full confidence in this, in their ability to fulfill their role, of course, since their leader is in jail under suicide watch in New York, Rikers Island.
Well, you know, I don't know that I have all that much confidence in them with the guy out of Rikers Island or in Rikers Island, to be honest. But It's nice to know that our president does. And finally, Coburn has left the Gang of Six.
He has left the Gang of Six. He said that they could not agree on Medicare cuts. A lot of people say that means the Gang of Six is gone. But there are other people, such as the Democratic head of the Budget Committee, is going to be putting forth their own plan. Again, these are a lot of people are saying the real talks are also happening from the Vice President going on at the Blair House on a regular basis.
So no Gang of Five then.
No Gang of Five, probably.
And then there were five. Ellen, I appreciate your time. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Talk to you tomorrow. And we're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make that thing happen!
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm having this flashback moment. Remember back not too long ago when the special election there in Wisconsin for Supreme Court judge between Kloppenburg and Prosser was going on. I think we were here to probably, well, it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, watching the returns come in, and it turned out that it was so close that nobody was going to call it. And then, you know, a couple days later, oh gee, we found a computer with 14,000 votes on it. Which we now find, you know, that they're down to the last couple of percent. I think 6% of the vote yet to be counted, or I think 3% yet to be counted. And Kloppenburg leads a little bit, but guess what? the county that mysteriously found all these votes, they're one of the last ones to return. Kind of makes you wonder. If I were running this whole thing, I would say Waukesha County there in Wisconsin. They would have had to been the first ones to return. We'll start counting when they're done and then go from there. And I'm watching this, big competitive race on the Democratic side for Commonwealth Court. I mean, this is going to come down. I don't know how long we're going to be here, but there's only a couple hundred districts yet to report. About 4% of the vote statewide, and there's, several hundred votes that separate Catherine Bachvar, who we had on the program last night, and Barbara Ernsberger. So again, we're keeping an eye on that. We're keeping an eye on the race in Dauphin County. One district left to report. Eric Papenfuss leads Wendy Jackson Dow by, 50 votes, 40, 43 votes. Wow. I mean, this is why, and again, I go back to, people tell me, my vote doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just a waste. This is the reason that you go vote. In the Dauphin County Commissioner's race, 71 people wrote in something else. This race could be decided by a handful of votes. In fact, the number two spot, number two and three are, 43 votes. 43 votes there. Yet 71 people write in. So had, 43 people voted for Wendy Jackson Dow, we'd have a dead heat. That's why your vote is important. There have been numerous elections that have come down to a handful of votes, which is why I think it's important that we stress so heavily that people get out and vote. Isn't very hard. You know how long it took me today? It took me all about 6 minutes. I parked my car. I got in. I walked 50 feet. I went in. I punched the little thing. I came out. I was done. I spent more time BSing with all the people standing at the polls and, hey, how are things going, than I did actually voting. So it'll be interesting to see what the numbers coming back tomorrow are going to be, what percentage of the people bothered to show up to the polls today. It will be interesting. Anyway, a couple of quick stories I want to go into while we're waiting for the final results to come in. From Conway, Massachusetts, Reuters is reporting that two towns there in Massachusetts are moving to ban the sale of what they're calling relaxation brownies named Lazy Cakes. Evidently, they're laced with melatonin and sold in food markets. Now, I guess a couple of kids, got a hold of them and they were hospitalized. But these chocolate treats, they say, are mellowing. They sell between $3 and $5 at the stores and in some nightclubs. They contain nearly 8 milligrams of the sleep supplement, melatonin, that is 25 times the usual amount prescribed for adults. So you kind of wonder why they're called lazy cakes. You eat them, you fall asleep. And again, I kind of wonder, why is this not regulated? Why is it that we have lazy cakes on the shelf for kids to get a hold of and end up hospitalized with? But, hey, we live in a free market. We live in a place where there's choice. And if those, 6 or 7 year old kids shovel their face with lazy cakes, let them go. That's how you thin the herd, I guess. Here's a good story, a real uplifting story. One that I always, I say hunting, I'm not a hunter. I'm not a big hunter. I know some people are. God bless you. You do whatever you got to do. But sometimes I like to root for the other side. I like to root for the underdog. And here in Alaska, a bear hunter was severely mauled by a grizzly bear over the weekend and flown to Seattle in critical condition, according to Reuters. Wes Perkins, 54, listed in critical conditions. Evidently, he was riding on a snow machine there in Alaska hunting bear, and it appears the bear won. So, good story there. Bear won. Mr. Perkins, zero. Here are 22,000 people are going to have the right to be ticked off at the government. The U.S. State Department said it mistakenly told more than 22,000 people that they had won this special U.S. visa lottery due to a computer glitch and that the drawing would be redone at some point in the future. The news dashes the hopes of those who were thinking that they'd be eligible. You know, you have 22,000 people who are going to win this coveted green card lottery. And turns out the computer gave it only to people who had registered in the first 2 days of the application period, not the entire 30 days. So they're going to go through and redo it again. Evidently, our government has this diversity immigration visa program where it's kind of like bingo. You put your name in the hopper and they roll the little balls and 50,000 are drawn each year. And congratulations, you won the lottery. You get to come to the country. Personally, not so thrilled with an immigration policy based on lottery. I'm not sure lottery immigration is the right policy. But, you know, judging from the rest of our immigration policy, one has to wonder if that's probably not better than having nothing at all, which is sometimes what we seem to be having in this country. Another good story coming out of California, and this is, you know, goes back to our dependence on the computers. A guy who owns a gas station, he was selling premium gas in California for $1.10 a gallon. Which led to a huge rush in business, and the unlucky owner out $21,000 within 4 hours on Sunday. The Valero station in Wilmington, California, was completely out of premium gasoline, all gone, and it cost him $21,000. So, you know, kind of one of those things where you go, oh, I missed mine, because I don't know about you, but I paid $3.95 coming over here, which, again, you know, it just blows my mind that we have, in the last 10 years, become accustomed to reaching deep into our pockets. I mean, really deep. $3.95 a gallon is steep. And when in a scenario where wages have been stagnant and actually declining over that period, the cost of getting back and forth to work, the cost of getting your kids to soccer practice or going to the grocery store, you know, hey, going around the corner is now a major economic decision. And what we've got is we're handing out this welfare to the oil companies. I don't understand why we're doing that, but we still are. We got a party that's defending it, and yet we're not making them pay. But here again, I go back to this no vision. No vision. We're still going to be using the oil in 10, 20, 50 years. And they've got us, man. It's a monopoly. You can't get to work with anything but the gas, but the juice. But that's the free market, or so they tell us. The free market will innovate. Has it? Are you happy paying $3.95 a gallon? I know I'm not. Yeah, I remember, and again, I go back to this. I remember driving down to Florida and going through Georgia with 79 cents a gallon. 79 cents a gallon. That's in the last 10 years. Here we are now. By the middle of summer, they're saying $5 a gallon. You know, Obama's bump from bumping off Bin Laden, coming back down. Why? Fuel prices. And we better do something about this. We better start thinking about how do we dig ourselves out of this hole instead of just saying, well, we need to just drill more, which is what the oil executives were saying the other day when they had their little powwow on Capitol Hill. We just need to drill more. You need to give us more permits. You need to give us more opportunity to go stick holes in the ocean. I guess that's the theory. Drill, baby, drill. Not think about how to maybe use our resource a little differently. Not maybe think about how we can move people around and use less energy. Not maybe think of how can we create more of our own so that we free up some of the oil supply that we have. You know, we seem to not be talking about that stuff. I mean, all of this fight over the budget deficit, all of this fight over cutting spending, all fine, well, and good, but a distraction has completely gridlocked our system. We are completely mired in this system of fighting each other without going, hey, how do we get out of the mess we're in? How do we create more energy? How do we make sure that we're able to power our economy so that we can compete with the Chinese, we can compete with the Indians? They're doing it. Why can't we? And I grow increasingly frustrated that all you see coming out of Washington, all you see coming out of Harrisburg, all you see coming out of state capitals around the country is how can we get our pound of flesh? How can we score our political points? And look, I'm as partisan as anyone. I want to score my points too. But a good idea is a good idea. I'm just not seeing any coming out. You know, the Republicans bring us nothing but the same tired ideology. This Paul Ryan plan, which is, you know, this brilliant, according to the right, this brilliant move forward, this visionary path is nothing more than what they've been wanting to do for the last 70 years. Which is basically, sorry, buddy, you're on your own. Sorry, Granny. You're on your own. It's what it is. I got my, it's the 2-year-old in the sandbox saying, mine. I got mine. Screw you. That's what the plan basically is. And when a party looks at someone like Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, and says, oh, there's a guy we want him to run as president. He's fiscally conservative because he went after and he screwed those unions. And he went after there and he cut a whole bunch of money from education. And he went over there and he kicked all those people off health care and quadrupled the health care costs of those public workers and really stuck it to them. But they don't bother looking at the story that came out today. That he's going to dump some $400 million into a mall project that has already dumped some $1.9 billion with almost no progress. We're going to make sure that we spend all this money because you know what? You know what New Jersey really needs? They need a mall as big as the Mall of America. With a 600-foot ski slope and a skating rink and an indoor water park. That's what New Jersey really needs. Massive retail and entertainment complex. That's what they need. They don't need transportation. They don't need another tunnel to get into New York City. They don't need to open up that line of commerce. They don't need that at all. They need another mall. We need more shopping opportunities. We need more minimum wage jobs. We don't need any more manufacturing. We need more mall space because, you know, we just don't have enough Bed Bath and Beyonds. Well, I need my linens and things. And they're going to spend $400 million pursuing a project that they've already that's already been dumped in almost $2 billion, $1.9 billion. And again, that's probably not going to be the end of it. But that's the road we're going, man. And I'll leave you with one last kind of funny story. The UPI is reporting out of Des Moines, Iowa. Police said University of Iowa student was arrested for trying to lighten up a graduation ceremony by throwing toilet paper into the crowd. Investigators said Robert Kohler, 22, who was not graduating, was arrested after tossing the toilet paper into the crowd of students during commencement. He was just trying to lighten up the graduation ceremonies. He pled guilty, not guilty, to disorderly conduct. Man, what is wrong with us? Gonna arrest a kid for that. Jeez. If you'd have seen what I did when I was a kid. Anyway, I want to thank our guests for being here tonight. Thank you. Thank you, Brett, for moving all the knobs and answering the phones and doing all that. We'll see you tomorrow night.
It's coming from the wind. You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the blood of sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the end. Yes, please.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Please, Mr. President, play some stimulus on me.